11 is from the Director of Intergovernmental Relations and the Interim Assistant Fiscal and Budget Administrator, an informational report on the impact of the state budget. This is also was considered by IGR yesterday. The committee on IGR took no action on that report.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. At the outset, I'd like to thank members of this committee who earlier this week testified at a public hearing on the Joint Finance Committee's State Fair Park, Supervisor Jerzyk, Supervisor West, Supervisor Schmidt, as well as Supervisor Dimitrievich, covered the main issues of transit funding, child support, family care, juvenile justice issues, and the whole medical assistance area, which, quite frankly, right now is still unknown and how it's going to be implemented. Mr. Chairman, I'd also like to take the opportunity to thank you for last week in assisting in the county ambassador program relative to human concerns in Madison, the lobbying effort. Thank you for your efforts. I appreciate it, as well as Supervisor Lipscomb's efforts. With that said, basically, the report that you have before you is a collaboration with Intergovernmental Relations, DOS Fiscal, and county department heads to analyze the impact of the governor's budget on Milwaukee County. Basically, this is a little bit of a follow-up in relationship to the report that was submitted last month to this committee, as well as to Intergovernmental Relations. However, more specifics as to the tools which would be provided in the budget repair bill once it's enacted has been attained. There is some savings that will be attained by Milwaukee County. However, given the magnitude of the cuts and state funding, as well as the fact that we have already budgeted these savings into our budgeting system, we will not yield much results in that effort. With us today are also impacted county departments, namely Transit, DHSS, Family Care, and Child Support Enforcement. We're also available to respond to any details or questions that you may have. But first of all, a little bit of background on the governor's budget. For purposes of the first year, our current calendar year for Milwaukee County, reductions in state funding would take place for approximately $2.7 million. These take place primarily in three areas: youth aids, court support grants, and mental health, alcohol, and substance abuse. As it relates to the year 2012, there are many more significant reductions that take place. As reflected in the attachment number one to the report, you will see that there is reflective of approximately $25.7 million in reductions in state funding. All impacted areas include shared revenue, transit operating assistance, general transportation aids, community aids, circuit court support services, child support, and mental health, alcohol, and substance abuse, as well as the elimination of the TAD and the AIM grants. Besides those items that have been acknowledged or identified, the very big unknown for Milwaukee County and counties in general is medical assistance. Quite frankly, this is a $500 million item that needs to be addressed, and the mechanism by which it's going to be addressed will be through the Department of Health Services, given the powers that were granted with it with Act 10. Again, there are no details relative to how this will be implemented. The department will be making those determinations. The possibility of impacted county departments would be behavioral health, disability division, aging, and family care. Speaking of family care, that's another item that, quite frankly, is a little difficult to get your arms around financially, because what's being proposed is a cap on enrollment, which basically would create waiting lists. And the filtering down process of creating waiting lists is going to create problems for the programming of the operations itself, as well as will lead to more costly institutionalized care for elderly folks. With that said, we have more information relative to property tax restraints that are provided in the budget, as well as the budget repair bill and how it impacts Milwaukee County. And for those purposes, I'll turn it over to Cynthia Paul.
Mr. Chairman, Supervisors, to expand on what Mr. Villarosa was discussing, in regards to the property tax levy, the state budget has changed the formula for calculating tax levy, which limits us only to the rate of new construction growth and also changes how we apply our debt service in the formula going forward. So based on a net new construction growth of 0.6% and this new formula, we're currently projecting an allowable tax levy increase in 2012 of $1 to $2 million. We won't have that exact number until the state shares with us their formula, which comes in mid-August. So in regards to the budget repair bill, in the county's 2011 adopted budget includes $19.4 million in savings for wage and benefit modifications. So looking forward to 2012, if the budget repair bill passes, we could achieve approximately $16.3 million of those savings. The difference in the 3.1 is due to the exclusion of the deputy sheriffs and firefighters in this projection. We also account for two other savings in this projection. The first is in 2011, we assume a 4% pension contribution. The county's actuary has told us for 2011 we will probably have a 6% pension contribution. So because of the increase of 2%, we'll have an additional savings of $3.7 million. The second assumption is that the accounting will apply the 2011 health care plan design to all of its employees. That would save an additional $3.7 million also. So assuming these changes, we have a reduction in state aid of $25.7 million and savings of $23.6 million to offset that deficit or that reduction. So we should have about a $2 million deficit. But because the county already has $16.3 million budgeted in its current year budget, we actually have a deficit of $18.3 million in 2012. Now lastly, just to put this into an employee cost sharing perspective for you, in 2010, non-represented employees contributed roughly 3.4% of their salary towards their total health care costs. With the addition of a 6% pension contribution, we would have roughly a 9.4% salary contribution for our employees. Mr. Chairman, Supervisors, that's a broad overview of our 2012 projection. If you have additional details, I'd be happy to provide those.
So, just for clarity, what you're saying is we've recognized savings, and there will be no benefit or additional tools that we'll receive from the budget repair.
Mr. Chairman, Supervisor, yes, we have that 19.4 already built into our base, so going forward, we would have to find additional reductions.
Mr. Chairman, yesterday at Intergovernmental Relations, to kind of say it another way, is that we've used about 70% of the fiscal tools already in our budget, so it's not as effective as it may be for other local governments who have not gone down the path that we had to shift a lot of these costs to the employees. As Paul did talk about 3.4% of salary going to pay health care, and that's certainly an accurate figure in the report. I just want to point out that oftentimes we talk about what percentage that employees are paying of the health care costs, because that's the way it's been framed in the budget repair bill. And that number was 16.3%. So the employees are paying 16.3% of the benefit, which translates into 3.4% of their salary. Okay, so just want to make sure, because you've probably heard a different number as the state budget has been bandied about, approximately 12.6, I think, is the number that the state is using as the new benchmark for what employees should participate in the total cost of their health care benefit.
Any comments, Supervisor Smith?
Well, and also, we used tools as the great word of the age here now, but The discrepancy between the 19.4 that Ms. Paul talks about and the 16.3 that we can raise is due to the exclusion of deputy sheriffs and firefighters. So that's what municipalities and everybody's going to have to face, because in the budget, the governor's budget that is trying to be passed and the courts will have to see, as we know, fire and police are excluded, and they keep all their bargaining rights, unlike everybody else whose bargaining rights would be taken away. So I just want to make that's the difference in the 19.4 versus the 16.3.
Any further comments? Supervisor Joseph.
Well, I keep wondering if, and perhaps we do have to wait till we find out what the final product is. I mean, we were at the Joint Finance Committee on Monday, and the committee's hearing all of this input. We're being set up to fail in terms of providing these services, because we don't have the tools. We will not have the ability to raise the property taxes, and we are going to now be creating waiting lists and so on, which will put additional pressures on some of the safety net services. So I think there is some responsibility that we have to start getting the word out to constituents so that, you know, I mean, there is a crisis in county government. They need to start planning appropriately. I just think we have an obligation to do that. Now, maybe it's not quite time yet. I think we have to wait to see what the final verdict is from the Joint Finance Committee, but I'm not expecting too much help. I was very disappointed on Monday to hear MMAC, we had Tim Sheehy there, indicating that this was a fine budget. He basically signed on to the governor's budget. And for transit, for example, the employers in town, I think, have got to understand that there's not going to be the county finding some way to save the weekend and evening routes as we did last year.
Flyers.
The flyers, et cetera. So, I remember the debate I had last year with Steve Boss, Beth Cox and myself were on the 4th Street Forum. And Steve Boss was kind of almost giving us a lecture that we have to make decisions on the nice to have versus have to have. And from what I heard from MMAC, the transit is apparently a nice to have, because there was no indication from them that they are in any way against removing transit from the transportation budget and the $700 reduction. And I'd like to ask Mr. De La Rosa, if this is going to be competing with all the other things in the general fund, that $7 million might actually be a larger reduction. Mm-hmm. Am I correct on that?
Given down the road, that could definitely increase, because you'd be in competition with everything from education to prisons to health and human services.
Mental health.
So
the whole gamut.
If that's perfectly okay with MMAC, that we're not going to have a transit system next year, employers are going to have to start gearing up to do vans for their workforce that comes on the bus. I just think we need to start getting the community aware of what services are not going to be provided, because this is not doable. We're being set up for fail here. So I think we can wait a little bit, but I think there is eventually going to have to be a game plan to get the word out to the community. We just can't wait for the 2012 budget to get people to start planning for all this.
Thank you. Mr. De La Rosa, just for clarity, on average, is it fair to say that about 35,000 employees ride the bus to and from work on a daily basis?
Yes, sir. That's correct.
And with the transfer, currently 7% of new car sales are being transferred to segregated transit funding.
Right.
That's about $35 million.
Yes, sir.
And then over the next 10 years, it'll increase to how much?
About $292 million at a 50% rate.
So there are sufficient funds to support transportation for employees if we remove transit back into the segregated transit fund.
Right. Plus, yes, sir. Plus the fact that it's kind of insulated within the transportation fund versus it having to be on a competitive basis for being the general fund.
Thank you. Any further questions? Comments?
Mr. Chairman, you also have, if you wanted, the reports from the individual departments.
Yes.
Because we have a lot of those members sitting out there.
We can get. Their particular order that you took it in?
I went through random order yesterday.
Okay.
The reports are in particular order. So.
We have family care.
Yes, we have family care is out there. Transportation is out there. EHD is out there. Health and Human Needs. Child support enforcement is out there.
No.
Okay.
Jerry Lydé can do that.
Yeah.
We have most of the departments that are there.
Why
don't we start with Jerry Lydé?
Okay.
First one.
There you go.
See, I tried not to call you.
First one I see, so.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I first like to say that the $500 million of Medicaid cuts, which at this point are unknown, the impact that they're going to have on Milwaukee County, we utilize a lot of Medicaid revenue in DHHS. In fact, we've estimated that about $44 million of our revenue is supported by Medicaid funding. That includes Behavioral Health Division, areas for inpatient and our community-based program. It includes community support programs, targeted case management. It also includes our wraparound program, which is Medicaid funded. It also includes our crisis services. In the Department of Disability Services Division, we have our children's programs that are Medicaid funded, and also in delinquency and court services, they draw down Medicaid dollars for crisis services. So when you look at that total amount of money, not knowing what that impact will be, we've got some significant concerns about how those cuts will be implemented. It could also mean that eligibility could be tightened for individuals on Badger Care. It could mean that rates in terms of our inpatient and community-based services would be cut. So that is a significant unknown. In fact, there is a budget hearing today that the Secretary and Assistant Secretary are going to be having at the Zufari that we will be addressing some of our concerns there. Also in BHD, there is an estimated reduction of GPR funds of about $280,000 in 2011 and $1.2 million in 2012. These dollars support actual services to individuals, so we will have to make some type of reductions or adjustments if those cuts proceed. And also at this point, one positive thing is that it appears that the $6.8 million of GAMP funding that was in the BHD budget is contained in the budget repair bill. So that is at least one less concern that we have. I just can't say much how disappointed we are about the cap on family care. As you know, we really worked very hard to move to expanding family care to persons with disabilities over the last 3 to 5 years. We actually have gone from a waiting list of 3,000 individuals to 2,000 individuals. We have persons now who have been referred to us since 2009 that we are beginning to serve. So that cap is going to mean going back to waiting lists, and it's going to mean many individuals who really thought this was the hope to receive some long-term support services is now going to be loom and gloom again. We also have a number of individuals who are on the waiting list who are older parents, who themselves might be looking to receive family care in the Department on Aging and have young adults with disabilities who they were hoping to receive some services. So I think this just really throws us back into a tailspin. The unintended, I think, consequence of capping family care for us is that because we also operate some children's waiver programs for children with disabilities and their families, we have been able to move individuals who are in a waiver slot once they turn 18 directly into family care. They did not have to wait. So what that did was freed up a slot in the children's waiver and allowed us to take individuals off of the waiting list. We've been successful in eliminating a 500-person waiting list for kids and disabilities in this community as a result of how we've been able to maximize those revenues in the last year, and that waiting list is going to continue. You've got a number of parents who have kids with autism, also kids who have emotional mental health issues, as well as young children with developmental and physical disabilities. The transportation issue, it has a dramatic impact on the individuals we support. As you know, many individuals use regular transit, fixed bus routes, but also paratransit, which is many of the individuals with disabilities utilize to go to work every day. They use it. It's really their lifeline to participate in the community. They go shopping. They do, you know, everything through the utilization of that transportation service. So, you know, we anticipate some, you know, significant setbacks for individuals who won't be able to get out, won't be able to go to work. In addition, individuals use transportation to attend work programs so that they're active. They have something to do during the day. They're not sitting at home. You know, the potential impacts for transportation are going to be devastating for the entire community. So I wanted to add that that's a huge concern for us also. In the income maintenance area, the state has proposed to centralize the income maintenance, the IM function statewide. As you know, Milwaukee County is already, those services are being state operated, but the impact could be if there are about 273 positions that are identified to be eliminated. We don't know how many of those will be in Milwaukee County, but the guess is that several of those will be locally impacted. That will leave the county with some legacy, potential legacy costs, as well as we receive about $1.7 million of revenue for rent, as we are the landlord for the space that they occupy on Valete. The first two floors are occupied by state staff. There has been very few details coming forth with reference to how they plan to roll out the income maintenance centralization functions. We are relatively close to having a lease established for this year, but certainly 212 is an unknown. In the event that they do move to a more centralized function, that will be less access for people who need those entitlement benefits, and we also are likely to see having to again have a building that will have space that we'll have to seek new tenants for in 212 with the loss of revenue as well. The last area is our delinquency and court services. There is a reduction in 211 of about $1.8 million and 3.6 in 2012. We certainly do hope that many of these budget cuts, you know, there can be some changes in the initial proposals because they definitely will have a significant impact on the individuals that we support. And I think just the last thing, when you talk about safety net services, maybe some of you will remember that when we transferred into family care, we had to include about $8 million of our basic community aids that rolled over to establish the family care capitation to support younger folks with disabilities. So much of the safety net dollars or flexible dollars that we had in the budget that may have been able to support services really folded in when we entered into family care. So that really leaves the department, I think, with much less flexibility in terms of dollars to support individuals who may need that safety net as we see some of the budget cuts impacting us. Have any
questions of the committee? Oh, Supervisor Johnson.
Because Disability Services Division, because of family care, you implied that maybe it was 500 children were able to receive services because the 17-year-olds became 18-year-olds, or the 18-year-olds were there and could access
family care immediately. Yes.
And this was over the last year or so?
Mm-hmm. Over about the last year and a half.
Okay.
New slots became available as individuals transitioned. And it was, it was an unintended consequences, but it had a huge impact
mm-hmm.
On that waiting list. And now we are beginning to establish waiting list again.
Same.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, ma'am.
It is.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Ms. Marks?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, committee members.
The budget correction bill that was put forward by Governor Walker does not have an impact on the Department of Child Support Enforcement. And that is due to the skill of Mr. De La Rosa and Ms. Bablich. During the last few months of Governor Doyle's term, they were able to work with our department and other county child support agencies at a joint finance meeting late in December called a 1310 hearing, and have money allocated from the Department of Children and Families to state child support agencies to ensure that our budget was whole going forward for calendar year 2010. This was due to the fact that there was a technical problem going from the Doyle administration budget to Governor Walker's budget. In the last biennium, the Joint Finance Committee allocated $8.5 million for the child support program statewide. Because stimulus funds were available during that time period, the actual expenditure was only $4.25 million. When the base budget was determined for Governor Walker to go forward, the base was set at the expenditure level instead of the intent of the original legislation. So the expenditure level was set at the $4.25 million instead of the intent of the last budget out of joint finance at 8.5. The net effect of that is, as we go forward into Governor Walker's budget, if changes are not made by the Joint Finance Committee, that could mean a 50% cut to the child support program. Since our last set of meetings with members of Joint Finance, we have had an opportunity to discover that there is money available in the Department of Children and Families. The Legislative Audit Bureau discovered $12 million that had not been allocated in the budget. We have approached a number of members of Joint Finance and asked that they allocate a portion of that money to the child support program. If they would just use $4.25 million of that money, we would be able to draw a two-thirds match and fill the gap in the budget. As if that is not done, the net effect to the Milwaukee County Department of Child Support is $3.6 million, which is made up of $1.2 million of the GPR, or tax money coming from the state, and a two-thirds federal match, which allows us to draw down expenditure revenue. The child support program makes fiscal sense for families in this community. For every dollar that our department spends to administer this program, $6 is collected from employers and distributed to families, which is spent in the community immediately. That money goes for food, shelter, clothing. It immediately goes back into our economy to support the children. For every $4 that is spent in our program, ensuring that children have fathers and that support is collected and distributed to the families, $5 is saved on other public assistance programs because people are not reliant on going on food stamps, medical assistance, cash assistance, temporary assistance to needy families in Wisconsin, or other housing programs. And so I think that I'm very optimistic. I'm hopeful. If I were not hopeful, this would not be a good position for me to be in, because you always have to continue to fight for your program, that we've put together a really good proposal, that just a little bit of a small allocation out of that found money in the Department of Children and Families really makes sound fiscal sense. This is a program that has received bipartisan support in the past. It's a program that allows fathers to connect to their children. Children who are born outside of a marriage, the father is not legally connected until paternity is established. We have worked in our community with the Fatherhood Collaborative, the Milwaukee Fatherhood Initiative, to ensure that everyone has a responsible role to their children and that children in this community are not left behind, that all children that live in this community are entitled to both the financial and the physical support of both of their parents.
Any questions or comments from the committee? Supervisor Jersey?
The other unintended consequence that I see is the services your department provides in the courts. Without those services, folks are going to pretty much be left on their own with regard to trying to do some of the collections and so on. And I think it's going to have tremendous impact on the service of the courts. And I don't know if you can put a dollar amount on that, but you know, we do hear the judges talk about the problems with pro se litigants and their process through the courts. It really does make things more difficult.
Mr. Chairman, Supervisor Jersey, I don't have a dollar amount that I can put on that. I do know that the courts having to assist pro se litigants does put them in a peculiar situation because they are supposed to be acting as the judicial officer and not as an advocate for either party. I can see that more individuals who would use our department on a regular basis would, because of delays in service, just the need to move forward, would be prone to seeking the pro se process and moving it into a self-help process. Just, you know, putting together some figures is what we see as some estimated losses to the community. I think that, you know, right now we establish paternity for about 6,000 children every year. That's 6,000 children who get to have a father. With that loss, if we experience that full loss, 1,680 children probably will not have a father, will not have a legal father. That means fathers will not be able to have their visitation, their custody. Children will be more susceptible to fall into the Bureau of Child Welfare, because if the child for some reason is removed from the mother's home, until there's an adjudication, the child can't be placed with what we believe to be the biological father. We have to make that legal connection. Additionally, we're estimating that the potential collections lost for families in this community could be $18 million. That's $18 million, again, that goes right back into the community. Thank you.
Mr. Brand?
Good morning, Mr. Grant.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, committee members. I'll give you a brief summary of the report that's in your packet. In reviewing the governor's biennial budget plan, we determined that the impact of that plan is significant to transit in two important ways. First, the plan decreases state operating aid for transit 10% in 2012 and provides for no increase in 2013. Secondly, state funding for mass transit is transferred from the segregated transportation fund to the general purpose fund. The 10% reduction in state aid equates to a funding cut of about $7 million for our transit system. It's projected that that funding loss could result in as much as an 8% cut in transit service, which would result in nearly 4 million lost rides annually. This is further compounded by the fact that when service is cut, ridership and passenger revenue also decreases. And that necessitates even more cuts in service to offset the loss in passenger revenue. As for the proposed change to move transit to the general fund, loss of this dedicated funding source would essentially force transit to compete with other very large state functions for very limited funding. And in our view, it would likely put transit at risk of even more cuts in operating aid in the future. Earlier this week, along with several of you, I spoke with the State Joint Finance Committee and urged them to reject the proposed changes and instead increase operating aid to transit at a minimum of 5%. However, if the proposed cuts in state aid are passed, we will need to consider a combination of expense reductions and revenue generating actions to fill the gap, including reductions in service and perhaps a fare increase. Now, at this time, I do estimate that transit could potentially be facing an $11 million shortfall in 2012. And I wanted to share that information with this committee. That includes the 10% reduction in state operating aid at $7 million. The increase, the current increase in fuel costs, we project our costs will go up about $2 million. And also there's a $2 million in unrealized advertising revenue that's currently part of our 2011 budget, and we will need to account for that as well. So, Mr. Chairman and Supervisors, while this information is a preliminary snapshot, based on what we know today, we will continue to monitor this situation, review what changes we can make internally, including efficiencies, to try to deal with this projected budget gap. If there's any questions, I can address those.
I know our system is not affected by the reduction in health care and pension for some of the other transit systems because it's privately operated. But I do want to ask the question, if the employees of Milwaukee County Transit System have comparable benefit cuts going forward, have there been steps like that taken within your bargaining process with the employees?
Mr. Chairman, Supervisors, we are currently in collective bargaining with the union that represents transit workers, and we're having discussions regarding comparable cost sharing.
Any further questions? Thank you.
Ms. Meijer?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, County Board Supervisors. The potential impact of the state budget on the Department of Family Care is primarily focused on the proposed enrollment caps. The state has said that they will take the number of persons that are enrolled in managed care end of June, beginning of July, and keep managed care programs to that number for the next 2 years. Potentially, there may be other programs besides family care that may have a shorter period of time when they are capped, but there isn't any definitive information about that. At a meeting with the State Department of Health Services yesterday afternoon, as a matter of fact, they indicated that these caps would be managed on a geographic basis locally so that all managed care programs, the two family care MCOs, PACE Partnership and IRIS in Milwaukee County, that number would be totaled together. And so as people come in and go out, it wouldn't be looking at the number of people in the Milwaukee County Department of Family Care as opposed to the number of people that are in community care, but looking at it as an aggregate. They still haven't provided any more details than that. That was just as of their verbal report yesterday afternoon. As you know, the Department of Family Care is reimbursed on a per member per month basis for the individuals that enroll in the program. So each person that enrolls in the Milwaukee County Department of Family Care brings with them that capitation payment of about $2,800 a month. And we spend about 95% of that simply on member services, those things that people need to stay independent in the community. The other 5% is our administrative costs for infrastructure, which I think if you look at any other sort of business entity is a pretty low administrative rate. So we have been growing the program on average by about 408 members a year. Again, with the cap, obviously, there isn't going to be any additional growth. There's going to be a financial impact. The potential loss with that enrollment cap in place for a year would be about $13 million. Now, again, there's going to be dollars not expended on behalf of members, but there will also not be the administrative portion for us to maintain our infrastructure. The other non-financial impact, of course, is, as Ms. Lighday referred to, people who cannot get into the program, people who do not have the availability of their nurse and case manager to assist them to stay in the community, unnecessary emergency room hospitalizations, which may result in nursing home placement that could otherwise have been avoided. A short-term nursing home rehab stay may end up being a long-term stay because there isn't any other place for this person to reside in the community. So we're going to see potentially entire family systems who don't have anything to keep them in the community. We have older adults enrolled in family care who are providing care to their adult children with disabilities. So there's a very large effect that I'm not sure that the State Department of Health Services fully appreciates. In addition, we have a very rich and diverse provider network with the fact that we serve over 7,600 members. We need to have a lot of providers in the community to do group homes, home-delivered meals, transportation, supportive home care, all those things that individuals need to stay safe and healthy in the community. Those providers are concerned, and rightfully so, about an enrollment cap. I have had at least three in the last few weeks, residential providers telling me that they can't continue to provide the service if they don't know that they're going to be able to have people fill their beds. I have care management units that I contract with who have already begun laying off staff because there aren't enough members to support the staff that they brought on. I've had to tell people to be very cautious when they look at expansion to another adult family home or another group home because we could never guarantee that by giving you a contract you would have an individual request services from you, but it's becoming increasingly difficult for people to estimate whether they're going to be able to maintain their business model. So we are in the process right now of starting a community-wide survey of our providers to look at how many people in Milwaukee County are employed in providing services to family care members and trying to come at some rough estimate of the economic impact that this program has in the community and the impact that the enrollment cap may have on that.
Supervisor Smith?
Well, I just want to make a quick comment, please, because we've all heard these pretty discouraging, of course, just said through once again in here everything we went through this, health and human concerns, but in particular in the behavioral health in these areas about 4 hours yesterday, and we hear about 2.5 hours yesterday we went through and had similar reports from the people in front of me, and I respect those reports, and I know the people who in these reports really care, and we're going to have to ask you to do more with less as usual because we know not everything is going to come out as we would like. Mm-hmm. It's the reality. It's going to have to happen. That being said, I'm committed as intergovernmental chair, and our staff certainly is, and Ms. Marks mentioned that the staff, for example, there's some things in this bill, the eviscerating bill, as it was called yesterday in the paper, because it does do makes it very difficult in a difficult time to, and we haven't heard from Ms. Stein yet. We heard about seniors over 65 and the effects it has on that. But there is hope that the testimony that's been given today, the highlights that were made in some of these things, but the fiscal realities are going to be passed on to our legislators, to the Joint Finance Committee. There is hope and prayers, as I mentioned yesterday, and we'll mention this briefly again today, that when the staff helps them out and they look at the figures and they see that maybe some things can be cost effective, that some things in this budget really do not make fiscal sense. And if there's one common defining factor here is that the many people in our state legislature, in the Senate, and particularly in the Assembly, where we know there was an amazing turnaround. There was 25 new members in the Assembly, most of them Republicans who were elected on an austere financial program. They are wedded to the fact, and they were elected by their constituencies to hold the line on taxes, no new spending, etc. Okay, so that's the reality we deal with. But that's the reality I think we have to deal with. But we're going to have to go after, we're going to have to emphasize to all these individuals and to their staffs that there is fiscal savings. There is some really ramifications to people who are most needy, that if this budget goes through as is, what that really means. And I know our staff is dedicated to do that. I am hoping there is a fiscal sense, and I don't want to say humanity, that's not a fair word to use, but that people will look at the repercussions of what this budget really does. And I know it's not popular. We talked about government not being a business today. People don't like to hear that. Well, it wasn't set up to be a business. That's not to say we don't try to be fiscally responsible, and I think this board has been on this finance committee, and the people in front of us have done everything they can to be as fiscally responsible as they can. Businesses change things, as was talked about today. We don't have the ability to change everything. We have mandates that but no businesses could work under. Okay, we are the creature of the state. The state makes these decisions, and we just have to provide the services. And we look at transit and put it, you know, I was the one thing I testified and emphasized was on moving things out of the segregated fund that just makes transportation. I don't take the bus. Most of my constituents don't take the bus. But I certainly realize, and I hope other representatives on all walks around the state realize that there are many people who have to take the bus. There are many people, we talked to jobs, we went through all this stuff already, so I'm not going to repeat it, of course. But there are many of our citizens who don't choose to be disabled, who hopefully choose in their health to keep going after 65 like I do in a couple of years, closer than I want to talk about. But that there are some abilities to use a service. And these very same people who I've talked to over the years who all want to be fiscally responsible as well as I do, but when they need the government, when their parent becomes ill, their parent becomes after 65, they need services. When they got stuff in their basement, okay, when all of a sudden the courts are closing on hours and they have properties and all of a sudden they want the courts remain open. And yes, we can put another $1 million in the budget, but we can't put $1 million anywhere else. Only it's the way it is. Mm-hmm. And education is the key. We cannot give up. You know, the budget's going to be extremely difficult again. You know, we can talk ourselves blue, but we have to be proactive, and we have to take this information to our legislators, and we need the department's help to be as have fiscal acumen, because that's what they're going to be looking at. These other arguments, I think, fall on deaf ears pretty much. They made a decision. They're going to hold the line in the budget, and whether you talk about this or that, and we see the newspaper reports and stuff and the blogs. Maybe I shouldn't read the blogs either. But, you know, it's hard not to when you want to see what comments there are and stuff. And people are just saying, well, you know, bite the bullet. Just you know, cut services, cut this, cut that. But there's a human element here that if you really stay in this job for any length of time and care about it, it just doesn't cut it. We want to balance the budget. We want to be fiscally responsible as possible, but, you know, and we're not given the tools to make adjustments then. It just makes it very difficult. So I know I've gone off a little bit, but, you know, I sit here and listen to this too, but we're going to have to be proactive ourselves. No one's going to give us much help. We're going to have to stick together, work through our representatives, make sure all this information is given, and then pound on this as best as we can. And we'll just have to see. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Ms. Stein?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman.
Good morning.
I was busy at my desk preparing testimony for this afternoon's Medicaid hearing. Tomorrow I have a meeting with a co-chair person of Joint Finance to talk about family care and senior care. And I think we're all working on this. Let's see, I've told at least three of you this. Our budget is perfectly fine. For next year, we have no cuts to any programs whatsoever. However, it is not fine for the seniors of this community who, when they need help and have been promised help, will not get help from us or any other place. The cap on family care means that for the first time since November of 2002, people 60 and over will be placed on a waiting list. When they come to see us, we have counseled these people for 11 years that it's okay for them to spend their own money on the services that they need, because when their money is gone and they have $2,000, we will be there to help them. We will not be there to help them. We have told people do not move into a residential facility unless you know that they have a family care contract, because when your money's gone, if they don't have a family care contract, they will kick you out. So go in a family care residential place, which they have done, and when their money is gone, which it will be, they will get kicked out, because we will not have a slot to serve them. And the other issue that I'd like you to understand about family care is that the Secretary of Health Services in Madison, Secretary Smith, believes that people will actually be okay without family care because they have a Medicaid card and they can buy services with that card. They can buy personal care and transportation. Only older people do not come to us on Medicaid for the most part. 99% of older people come to us having spent all their money down to the Medicaid asset level, but having more income in their income level than regular community Title 19. And when you're in a nursing home or when you're in a community-based waiver program, you can be eligible because you're going to spend your money to help pay for the cost of the service. So you can have a an income a great deal higher than the community Medicaid income and still be enrolled in the program, therefore going on Medicaid. You cannot do that if you're in the community. You will simply be poor. That's it. You will not be enrolled in Medicaid. You will not be able to have services. So that's the hugest issue for us and the thing that we're fighting every day, because older people will enter nursing homes. It will cost the state at least twice as much to take care of people than it does in family care, sometimes four times as much. So it is not a fiscally sound decision. It is also not a humanely sound decision. The other issues are senior care, which is the prescription drug program for older people that everyone in this state has fought for the last 8 years through the Bush administration, the Obama administration. Every member of our congressional delegation has petitioned the federal government to continue senior care, calling it the best program ever developed, which in fact it is. this Secretary Smith does not like it, and clearly has the ear of people more important than me, and has decided that everyone will have to enroll in Medicare Part D, and at a minimum, people will be paying about $1,200 more a year for a worse program. And I can tell you that the reason people are on senior care is because they can't afford to be in Medicare Part D, so it's going to be pretty awful. And then I think the last thing I'd like to talk about, because if Supervisor Dmitrievich were here, she would ask me to talk about it, and that is that if, in fact, there are cuts in paratransit, especially cuts that say that paratransit will only follow the fixed bus routes, which legally, according to the Americans with Disabilities Act and the paratransit laws, it only has to do. We provide paratransit services in Franklin and Oak Creek and many other places in this community where there is no fixed bus service, and those older people and people with disabilities will be through. They will have no ability whatsoever to get transportation to lead their lives for crucial things like medical appointments and things that the rest of us use transit to lead our lives, like going to worship or getting our hair done. So that will be over. That's the cheery news for older people in this budget.
Any questions from the committee? Thank you.
Mm-hmm.